Hello and welcome to the third episode of A Blank Canvas. Welcome along, welcome, welcome, welcome. I hope you're doing good. My name is Cameron, and on this week's episode, I speak to Atari and Precious, Joe and Jem, Jem and Joe. Atari and Precious, they're an incredible production duo, amazing DJs. I've known Jem for, maybe 8 years now. We used to DJ for a brand together. But yeah, it was a really good conversation. We speak about a bunch with the music industry, and it was just a really, really fun conversation. Hopefully, I have suggested that we potentially make a podcast, the three of us, because it was just really thought-provoking, everything we discussed, so I really enjoyed it. But yeah, anyways, let's get in with it. This is episode 3 of A Blank Canvas with Atari and Precious.
Welcome to A Blank Canvas. With Cameron Rawson. Cameron
Rawson. Jem, Joe, Atari and Precious, thank you very much for joining me today. I've probably selected the one of the worst days of the year, given how warm it is and how hot it is. How hot and warm is it where you guys are?
It's about 32, 33.
Yeah, we're in London, like so we're feeling it. We're feeling it a lot.
Oh, wow.
We're all right.
We were just before we hit record, I was like, oh, it's 29, 30 here. But damn, that is a big difference. Those 4 degrees.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So I want to start right at the beginning. So, Jem, first, when was the first time you heard music, and what was the sort of what was the social situation, and what kind of music was it you first heard, and how did you feel? Can you remember?
Oh, what do you mean, like as a kid or like going out?
Ever.
Oh my god! First time I heard music. That's a really good question. Probably like when I was a kid and I did dance shows. That's some of my earliest memories of music. Is like, I did like ballet and tap and stuff. And then, I remember music from having to like perform to these songs. We did like dance shows every year. So I think that's probably my earliest memory of music when I was about 3 when I started doing that. So,
wow, that's amazing. and DJ?
Probably, I mean, stuff on the radio, but I mean, I guess the first album I bought, Park Life.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Park Life.
Nice. So I remember mine was, do you remember a band called Garbage?
Yeah. Yes.
So I remember when I was, I think about 4 or 5, it's not necessarily a memory per se, more a reminder. Cause my mum always tells me the first time I heard music was when we'd dance in the living room to Garbage. And I was like, that sounds so wholesome. So that's great. But yeah, nice. Cause it's something that as a DJ and especially as a music producer like you two, you know, obviously, early influences. I mean, do they play a role? Obviously, not that early, but you know, when you were growing up, do these influences
that they do? It's, you know, sort of, it's sort of in the DNA. So, drum and bass is definitely in my DNA. Hip hop, things like noughties, electro, I loved that kind of thing. That's the roots of what we're doing now, really, and pop music in general. But I think a certain type of pop music, a sort of literate, intelligent pop music is...
Yeah, I was quite into indie alternative music growing up. Yeah. So, and then, yeah, obviously I managed to kind of like expand my horizons a bit and ended up listening to loads of different types of music. And now I love everything pretty much. Like,
yeah.
It's hard, isn't it? You were just saying about pop music. So are you saying there's like different types of pop music?
I just love anything in electronic, really. So that's sort of in my DNA. And Jem's a bit of a old time rocker.
Yeah, I used to like, I was having some coffee and I nearly choked. I was like an old time rocker. Oh, that sounds so glamorous,
you know,
and
what
sexy.
I mean.
I used to love a bit of classic rock, I have to say, a bit of Joan Jett and Susie Quattro and stuff, and some of the like 80s hair metal. I really loved a bit of rock, so yeah.
Do you ever when you're getting requests in bars or clubs you both respectively DJ at, do you ever get a request and you're like, I actually don't know what it is, and have you not heard of the band or you're not heard of the artist, and then the customer or whatever you want to refer to them sometimes as dickheads, but do they ever go, wow, how do you not know that? You're a DJ. So, you know, are you expected to know every single song that's ever existed because you're a DJ? I mean, it's pretty crazy.
I think it's important that you do know anything that's been, you know, big over since the 60s. I mean, you should be aware of them. And then it's about whether it works in that context. So you can ask for a very good record, but if you're asking for it in the wrong context, it's just going to sound ridiculous kind of coming on. So, yeah, I mean, people are just flashing their phones with Spotify and that's fine. But something could have millions of plays on Spotify all over the world and it still hasn't, you know, broke through in this country. Mm. So it's a little bit like things can be huge somewhere else, but I do try to keep an eye on what's kind of breaking over here. Keep an eye on charts and that kind of thing, because you do need to be aware. If somebody asks for something really, you know, current, it's great.
And also, like, you don't always know what people look like. That's a really funny thing. So, you know, like, if someone asks you for their own track, and it could actually be them asking, and you don't necessarily know, like, that it's actually them. Like, that happened to Joe.
Oh, right. Okay, go on.
Okay. Shall I name the producer?
Yeah.
Who was he again?
Shane Codd.
So there's a recent hit, Shane Codd.
Get Out of My Head.
Get Out of My Head.
It's a banger.
It's been a top 10 hit.
It's a tune.
And somebody asked me for it and flashed it up. And I've been playing kind of Calvin Harris. So it was a perfectly good request. It's just, it was one of those ones that I went, oh, it's a bit cheesy for me. So I didn't even...
Oh, wow.
So I just said, oh, look, good. It's good, but it's a little bit on the cheesy side for my dance set. I don't have it. And he went, I am Shane Codd.
It must have been more embarrassing for him, though, because I imagine he was probably suspecting you to know.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, this is me. Hello, you know, kind of thing.
No, I knew it. I just elected not to put it in my sets because it just wasn't quite to my taste. But then I instantly said, oh, well done. Yeah, 10 records and millions of plays. Well done.
I think it's like as a producer, you know that, like, we know the songs, but you don't always know what the other producers look like.
Yeah.
So I think it's that sort of thing more.
One of my next questions further down the line was going to be along the lines of given the vast amount of producers breaking through now, or at least to a certain level. I mean, I go through Instagram and I see and I recognize names, but I will never remember faces because, you know, there's obviously there's quite a look anyway amongst male DJs now, with especially in Ibiza and places like that. And I'm absolutely not slagging people off here. I'm just saying that there is a trend with how people dress and how they look and stuff like that. But there's so many producers, and given that they're just stood behind decks, you know what I mean? You know, they're stood behind decks. It's like, when are you going to sort of really recognize the faces? They're not necessarily going to be on posters. It's just a bunch of names kind of thing.
I think that's actually good. I think if the music is bigger than the person, that's a good thing. If their tracks are huge and they can walk down the street without kind of being recognized, I think that's actually a good thing for them. So it's not that important to us, because at the end of the day, it's kind of what's coming out the speakers. Really?
Oh, 100%.
So, you know, if something works with our sets and the various things we do, we'll drop it in. It helps if it's something that's big right now. We have to have it, and then we elect whether it's worth playing in a particular set. So it's just a judgment call, really. You know.
Do you think that nowadays people can access people can become a producer easily than ever before? Do you think that's a good thing, or do you think it's a bad thing? And I guess the bigger question is, do you think as a result of that there's so much music being produced that it's kind of saturated it and potentially made it more difficult for example yourselves to break through?
It's a double-edged thing, isn't it? It's great because we can control our releases. We're not signed in the traditional sense. We are the record company as well. On the other hand, the internet noise is just, you know, deafening from every angle. So it's good and bad. Would I want to go back to, you know, the 80s or the 70s when you had to get signed to put your music out? On retrospect, no.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Like, when you look at the past, I think what we grew up with, like, is like a selection of music that was kind of fed to you, and it was like being kind of offered a menu, but the menu was quite, it was like a kind of a la carte menu. It was quite sort of specific, and it was like, this is what's on offer, and it's up to you whether you go and buy that, whether you want to take that. Whereas now, there's like a huge buffet, and you can pretty much, it's like, have whatever you want.
Well, I mean, that's definitely going out on the social medias to sort of that's so well put. Never thought of it like that.
Yeah, it's kind of. I think if you look back in history, you know, punk music started because people couldn't get signed because, you know, it, in the mid 70s it was ABBA and Queen and things like that. And they were big budget acts, you know. They'd worked hard to get there. So people started, you know, it all moves with technology. So then you got, you know, small vinyl presses pressing up punk singles. Then you got the dance explosion in the late 80s and 90s, house music and all of that. And that was all just to do with affordable technology. So music goes where technology goes.
Yeah, I think, and what you're saying as well, asking about whether everybody should obviously have access. Absolutely, everybody should have access. It's brilliant that everybody's, you know, able to kind of put a song out. They will say, oh, everybody's got a song inside them. And it's great now that everybody can release it. Of course, it does make for an overcrowded marketplace. But at the same time, we found with streaming services like Spotify, for all its faults, it's good in the fact that there is kind of like content curation. And as far as you can't just put anything up there, do you know what I mean? It needs to be a certain standard to kind of actually be released properly. And
also, I guess, in terms of playlists being edited as well, It's like you can't just whack yourself in a playlist. You've got to be selected by...
It's
literally like having a...
Sorry.
A million radio stations. We're on this forthcoming release. We're going to really be working hard on that. And we need to be the label as well. I think the other thing I like about Spotify, I know it gets a lot of criticism. You have to remember that in the old... People, you know, historically... Rock stars got paid a lot of money, but everybody now views themselves as a musician, and therefore they've got a right to be paid. And I don't really think it works that way anymore. I think you should get paid if you get, you know, a lot of traction, a lot of plays, and you get used, of course. But people almost seem to still regard it as an automatic right that they should be paid. And really more, it's like a continual audition until you get to a certain level. So you have to put effort into it. Yeah, it's like sort of being a rock climber or something.
Having said that, it is still an evil corporation, and we are technically not in favor of that, but at the same time, yeah, I know what Joe's saying.
Yeah, it's just become the market leader. That's sort of, yeah, and that's the way it's gone. But at the same time, I like the platform physically. I like the way it looks. It's clean.
Yeah,
so essentially, if I've got this right, let's say in terms of horse racing, not that I obviously promote that, but let's say there's more horses racing, but there's less people who can win, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. You know, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I guess though, another sort of issue with it is with Spotify is the whole playlist situation. That it's the exact same as a radio station, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually a really good point. It is, you know. And we were actually doing radio during lockdown. I started before that. We had a show on Shoreditch Radio, and so we were actually carrying that on during lockdown and doing radio, and we were still discovering lots of new artists, you know, mainly through Spotify. That was the main place that we discovered them, you know, new music playlists, all sorts of different, you know, deep diving, but definitely through the medium of Spotify. And yeah, it is quite comparable to radio in that sense, I think.
Well, I think a lot of these sort of like radio pluggers and editors and alike have gone from either, you know, Radio 1 to Spotify or to Amazon Music and vice versa. But it's great, but I think it's still as cliquey as it's ever been, or maybe even more so, given the whole sort of situation we're just discussing, in which there's so many people wanting to get airplay now. I mean, still, do you think radio, I mean, this is a completely different conversation, but do you think radio and sort of streaming platforms truly represent the amount of good music there is out there? Because I'd say a strong no, to be honest.
I agree. I think they can't possibly. When we did London Loves, this was just our take. We wanted to concentrate on a city and go, we can't cover the world. Let's find out what's in our nice. Area.
Yeah.
What's nice. The sound of London? That was the premise. Like, and your show, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah, like across the genres in London. So it wasn't just like one specific genre. It would be everything from, you know, kind of like UK rap to, you know, UK Afrobeats, UK like jazz, soul, R&B, and then maybe some indie, alternative, electronica.
Incredible.
Yeah,
like
yeah. But just kind of focusing within people that were coming out of London, you know, so kind of people that live here, people that, yeah, representing London at the moment. And I guess you could do that obviously for every city. You know, you could do like a Manchester Loves or something, you know. It's really nice to see, obviously, because I think when we used to go out more and see a lot more live acts, you know, and go to club nights, I think it was really easy to discover new music then. But I think that's obviously there's been a steady decline of that, you know, over the past decade. And now it's people consume and discover music in different ways. They discover artists differently. I think kind of independent radio or playlisting or, you know, podcasts as well, you know, great way to discover new bands. You know, we discovered a new band listening to your podcast, you know, so yeah.
Yeah, I gave them a listen as well.
Great.
Oh, thank you. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. So on the same topic, Apple Music, I discovered the other day, have a localized playlist for sound for cities and, as I said, sounds, mix of city and towns. For cities across the UK. So I was looking at Liverpool, Manchester, London, Nottingham, and I was like, oh, this is so exciting. Then I realized they're all pretty much identical. So it was kind of defeated the purpose. I was under the impression that clicking onto these playlists that it was going to be local artists from those towns or cities, but it wasn't. It was just basically the top 40s, very, very slightly adjusted.
Good point. A lot of the charts, yeah, they're kind of like, what's the top song in London? And it, you know, it could be something from anywhere in the world. Actually, when you go a little bit deeper into Spotify and you come across something where the artists have named the location, you see what's actually being listened to in London from London artists, but it's not visible on the main Spotify platform. I don't know about Apple, but I agree it would be lovely if there was a kind of location filter where you could just go, I want to hear, you know, I'm going to Edinburgh next week.
Yeah,
100%.
Who's good out of Edinburgh, who's from Edinburgh that maybe might be playing live out there or might be DJing, that kind of thing.
It just gives you a feel for the city. Yeah,
I'd love to see that.
What do you think is wrong with the music industry right now?
Oh, how long have you got?
Okay, we can say what we want. We're not going to name names. I just think this term artist is becoming a little bit abused. There are performers, there are singers, and they're kind of taking the credit as an artist when really they're the main actor in a film with lots and lots of people involved in making their record. Mm. And I think that's a big shame for the other people involved. The traditional band structure, sure, you've got a lead singer and they normally got most of the, you know, they got the front cover, they were at the front and all of that. And that's right. But I just feel it's become a little bit like solo stars. Social media's amplified solo stars to the point where it's a bit of a shame that there's not enough visibility. It's almost like they intentionally keep everybody involved in making, say, a Dua Lipa record out of the picture a little bit and say, oh, what an amazing, Dua Lipa's amazing album. There's tons of people making it and writing it and everything.
That's so interesting.
We did see this documentary thing with Dua Lipa. And we do love, you know, we love Dua Lipa's sound and she's a great performer. She's amazing. But we did see this documentary and we weren't going to name names, were we? Oh, damn it. But we saw this documentary and she did walk into the room and there was like a couple of singer-songwriters there and she went, oh, and they were playing this song and she went, oh, amazing, my song. And we were like, oh, okay. So it was just walking in and being like, oh, here's my song that had basically just been written for her, you know? And then I guess she'd maybe add a word or something and then take a credit. And that's still a bit of a, that's the, still the model that's been going on in the industry for like decades. And it's that major label kind of model. And it's just a shame that that's still happening, I think, when there's so many amazing independent artists out there that are writing, producing, doing everything themselves, you know?
Is that there's one argument I would say, and I'm just doing this as a kind of way to provoke more conversation, but do they not see the benefits financially? These, uncredited individuals or unmentioned individuals?
They do.
Or...
In fact, they get more, I imagine, by kind of having some kind of agreement that they don't take too much credit for it, as opposed to, because we have a kind of saying, payment or credit, and we have to judge up. If I was offered to ghost produce somebody, would I take it or would I say, no, just credit me and I'll get the Spotify plays, but don't pay me? So it's that kind of situation where do you want the accolades or do you want the revenue and let the performer take the kind of credit? Of course, Dua Lipa's the cherry on the top of the cake. She's fronting it and she's bringing it to people. She's doing the social media, all of that. I get it. It's just there's a lot of people involved in making records and I just think it's a little bit of a kind of system now where you've got the same co-writers on tons of mainstream artists. And I like the artists, by the way. Yeah. I like Ed Sheeran. I like Anne-Marie, all these type of people. They produce work I like and that in a certain environment I would play. And I was like, it's well produced. It's good. I think pop music's improved maybe since the noughties when it was dodgy. Like, I'm talking boy bands, you know, Westlife, dreadful stuff. It's improved, but it's also filtered out maybe some of the more innovative people are now just, I mean, they're still on Spotify. You can still have, you know, a million listeners and not be a household name. So I think there are more winners in the long run.
Having said that, go for it, Cameron.
I was just going to say, if we were to give them these artists truth serum, do you reckon they would sort of say the same thing? Like, I'd like to be doing my own thing. I'd like to be working with different people. It's the label. Or do you think they'd just not give a fuck, really?
No, I think actually it's a really interesting question. And I mean, I can't speak for all of them, like, but I think maybe they would want to have a little bit more, you know, input, you know, like after like a lot of artists and bands, and they do, you know, like they'll have a couple of albums and then the third album or something is like, they'll want to go their own way and try something different. That's
the danger, is that, you know, you give them creative control and they just do something that just isn't the label, kind of commercially appealing.
And flops.
Yeah. 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 So I feel like they would. And it's the same with social media. You know how a lot of artists were being like forced to join TikTok and they were coming out and saying Florence and the Machine. She was just like, oh, I'm being forced to join TikTok, but I don't really want to. But, you know, here's my song.
She was just sort of sitting there going, here you go, then here's your TikTok. And then she just started singing. She went, here's your lo-fi version of my song. You can find the proper version on my album. So it's a little bit like that. It's like you want a lo-fi, you know, authentic version. Here it is. I'm just, you know, in my dressing room.
But it's so disingenuous, ironically, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I totally get why she did that face, because she just spent a year or so working on the album sounding amazing, and now you just want to put a mic in front of me and just do it. And she can, you know, she's a proper performer.
Yeah.
So there are people like her that we just think are brilliant.
But at the same time, there are people that are, you know, absolutely like kill it on TikTok, and it's been a really good platform for, you know, artists like Pink Panthers coming through. You know, there's some really talented people on there that have come through because of TikTok, and that's can only be a good thing.
It's just another way. It would have been, you know, the indie scene a while back, and now it's places like that. So there's always talented people going to come through, whatever the medium.
Do you think TikTok is in itself a genre? Because I remember seeing a website where it was like rock, dance, hip hop, TikTok, house, and I was like, whoa, what? Like they sort of put TikTok as its own genre per se within pop, maybe.
Put it this way: on my USB, when I DJ, I have a TikTok folder.
Same. Mine's TikTok charts, and I update it maybe once every month or something like that, which is highly depressing when as a DJ you're going to be playing good quality music, and you know, it's, oh, how do you know that song? Oh, it's TikTok.
It's funny when it's an old song and you're like, why are people that look about 18 asking me for a song that's like, you know, 10 or 20 years old, and you're like, oh, it's TikTok.
They don't realize it's old.
They don't know.
Sweet. I love that Sweet Caroline. Oh, so great.
I honestly suspect that there'll be uni students coming through now who think ABBA were like from the early noughties or something like that.
Yeah, like Robin or something. They're probably going, oh yeah, they're yeah.
Yeah, history gets clouded a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, so a good point here is along the TikTok thing. So I don't want to talk about it too much because TikTok pisses me off and I had to delete it. Because I remember seeing Joe Rogan on a short clip discussing the terms and conditions of TikTok, which we won't go into. But anyways, I saw on Patrick Nazemi's Instagram story, big up Patrick Nazemi, doing amazing things, but he put up a thing about how, you know, obviously you only get to see a 15-second snippet or whatever on TikTok of music now. So it's like, you know, songs have gone from being listened to in full across an entire album to getting to a point now where you listen to a song within 15 seconds and you're sort of your attention span is nothing. You just go next. I mean, I'm guilty of skipping songs left, right, and centre on my Spotify.
This happened with there's loads of examples, but I mean, I play a lot of UK rap, and it happened with Tion Wayne and Ardy Body, and basically Ardy's verse blew up on TikTok, and that kind of launched him. And so when you play the track, loads of people shout along to the first verse when Ardy comes on. And then after that,
Whoa, just, I didn't think.
You know, wow. And really good rappers after him, like Bugsy Malone, but their bars didn't blow up. So people just know that bit of the song. So we've seen the effect of it.
Yeah. It's weird.
At the same time, songs are big. Songs are big anyway. Somebody came up to me the other day and said, why are you playing, you know, TikTok songs? And I was playing The Weeknd.
Oh, like, wow.
Well, it's The Weeknd.
Oh, God.
he's big anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that post that Pat made, and I completely agree with it. Like, I reshared it as well, actually. But, yeah, I just think it's, especially as DJs, like, you have to look at, like, you know, not being, like, poor DJs, but when you're doing a set, it's, you know, you have to have a certain amount of songs to fill the space. And if you're having to play songs that are, like, a minute and a half or something, that's a lot more songs to add in, and that's a lot of quick trying to think of something to play
next.
That's
a lot more work as well, so no thank you. No thank you.
No one's going to sympathise with us.
No, definitely not.
No.
I saw on Ryan Tedder's Instagram story the other day, and I find Ryan Tedder from One Republic quite fascinating because he's involved with so many people, and I do genuinely do like One Republic for being who they are. I respect what he does and stuff like that, but he put up a very interesting Instagram story yesterday about how, I think it's either the Grammys or the Oscars, have just for the first time introduced a songwriting award purely for songwriting. However, I can't remember what it was exactly, but the issue he had is that if you were nominated, you can't be nominated for this award if you had any touch in production on the song you wrote, which I think is quite mind blowing.
You can't be nominated if you actually.
So it was. Let me pull up the story now. It was along the lines of, one second, Ryan Tedder. So Songwriter of the Year Grammy submissions can't have production credit and writing credit on a song for it to count. Only songwriting.
Oh my God! Wow.
Yeah, how crazy is that?
That's really splitting hairs. But I think that's the Americans are sort of really good at that, making so many categories for different awards, so they can give an award to so many people. But I get the logic of it.
Yeah,
but
we watched the Grammys last year, but like we watched it all through, as in like all the awards, which we've never done before, just because we thought it'd be really interesting. I mean, you know, we had a lot of time on our hands. Like it was post-pandemic, wasn't as much happening. And we watched like the whole thing, and there's so many categories. At the same time, it's great because obviously a lot of people are getting recognised, you know, and it's like perhaps they're not household names, but they're industry names that are getting recognised.
But does that not at the same time bring down the value of awards though, with so many? Does that make sense? Like if you're having a race, and you know you're giving out awards until 10th place and there's only 30 people racing, it's like, do you see what I'm saying?
That is a good point, actually. I do agree.
A lot of it's just to do with the way the industry spins. It's like Grammy nominated artist, you know, and that then they get to put that permanently on their resume when they're being promoted, and it makes them sound really important. And they probably are important in their field. You'd have to be, but it just makes for a lot of, it's a lot of spin.
Do we think labels have potentially paid some people money in the past to give certain artists awards? Or
Yes, I should think
I mean, it is definitely But I mean, the thing is, I think even like the common man would probably expect that to have happened. It makes no sense. It's like, when was it The Weeknd who didn't get nominated for any award, and his album was fucking incredible?
That's absolutely mental. It was crazy.
I was such a great album from start to finish, and it's just insane to think that he didn't get nominated.
Awards are always weird like that, though. I think, like, you know, even like with the Brits and stuff, you know, you look at them and a lot of people that win, you're like, why is this person winning? And then a lot of them, half of them can't be bothered to show up, and you're just like, this is crazy. It's so industry slapping each other on the back, isn't it? It's like, you know.
Oh, it's horrible.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it's just.
But we still watch it. It's fucking annoying.
I do. I actually love the Brits. It's just, I know, you know, kind of the criteria for getting a Brit Award, and the criteria for getting a Mercury is slightly different.
Yeah.
They've slightly come nearer to each other recently, which is, I don't necessarily think it's a good thing in terms of who gets nominated. But they're still reasonably transparent compared to the Grammys, you know. So I'm kind of, well, I guess what I'm saying is I prefer the UK version, but you know. There's so many people making interesting music that never get anywhere near these awards.
So, you know, I heard Logic on a podcast a few weeks ago, who I think is an amazing artist.
Yeah. I've seen him.
And have you really?
Yeah, I was doing the warm up at Ali Pali, and then I got to go in and see him to play a lot of hip hop in the you know, there's a lounge before people go in.
So I was, the VIP
The VIP bar. So we play there sometimes as a kind of warm up DJs in the lobby before people go in. So I went and saw Logic. He said he was retiring.
Oh, he did. Yeah, he said he was retiring, and then he came back. But he made a really good but quite sad point in the fact that over lockdown, the amount of artists that were just being about to be signed and pushed out by labels, and then the pandemic happened, and they were just pushed aside because somebody else came along. And it's like, you think about all these artists over you know, 2020 to 2021, even as far as now, who should be out there based on the amount of hard work they've put in, and they just weren't pushed through because somebody else got there. And it is just, I mean, there's got to be a certain level of luck to it, you know?
Yeah, but it's an inherent problem with major labels is that they
move slow.
Well, basically, they also have like fingers in lots of pies, so they'll like literally like invest a little bit in loads of different people. They'll pick up a load of people and put them on a development deal and say, okay, we're going to keep all these people, and then we'll see which one does well, and we'll push them, and then the others will kind of get forgotten about, you know. And it's such a shame, because obviously everybody, you know, is working equally hard, you know, everybody deserves it, but it tends to be who's making them financial rewards. Yeah,
crazy. It's probably one of the worst industries in the world if you think about it, in terms of like the sort of level, you know, way the way you become successful within it. I guess
I was thinking about this the other day, because we've obviously been watching football quite a bit in the last few weeks, and well done the Lionesses. I'm sure you're all listening.
Yep.
The thing with sport is, I know there's a lot of money in you know, FIFA and all of that. I know there's billions of pounds in it, but there's a quantifiable result, and it's almost not quite the same with music, because you can say, well, that sold a million. Well, yeah, it had a huge budget. Of course, sold a million.
Yeah, okay.
It's never going to be a level playing field in a way, because saying something's the best is not the same as saying you won 3-0. You won. You scored three goals. It's incontrovertible. Saying something's the best is always going to be a subjective thing.
Yeah, because I guess, track A versus track B, they've both had the same amount of effort and time, and they're both equally talented. But then track A could have had 5 more million on marketing and gone to the right radio plugger kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's for sure. Like, yeah, I mean, we've found that, I think, you know, like with our own music, like having to actually, like, you know, put, obviously you're putting your own money behind it when you're independent, you know, and obviously with majors, they have a budget per artist, you know, I don't know what the budget is, but there's a budget per artist. And then depending on how much the artist makes back, they get more of that budget, and then they'll push it and push it. And then it's like, oh, but if they're not making enough return, then they'll kind of cut them off cold. Cutting someone off, they'll ghost them.
they get ghosted a little bit, and we keep seeing this crop up on social media. People like, you know, I've been waiting 3 years for my album to come out.
Yeah,
why isn't it out? Because the record label won't release it.
That must fuck up somebody's mental health so much as well.
I think mental health is a huge problem in this industry, like massively. Like, you know, and especially like when you're, you know, I think, I don't know, especially with young artists, I think getting picked up by labels, and they probably think it's really life-changing, you know? And perhaps it would have been, like, maybe like 10, 20 years ago, it probably would have been more life-changing than it is now. But I think, you know, these days it can be like, you know, you think you're maybe going to be bound for like this huge kind of stardom and success, and only to get dropped, you know, like because you're someone decided that you weren't worth putting any more money into or something, you know, you're not making any money.
It's mad because I had a conversation with my friend, and she's an actor, and she was saying about casting directors, how you could be incredible at what you do. You could be perfect for the role, but if the casting director doesn't like your name because it's the same name as their ex, or doesn't like your like the way you look or sound because it reminds you of somebody, or you did something that just really pissed them off. I bet it's the same within music as well, though, because essentially there are, in quotation marks, casting directors in the sense of, you know, maybe A&R or people that actually sign artists, and they might just not like the person. They might be like, wow, their music's really good, but I just don't like them.
That I think historically that's always been a bit of a problem. You get an A&R signing somebody, certainly when I've read about you know, people in the past have been signed, and then they say, oh, the A&R we worked with who signed us, who really believed in us, left the company, and then they just sort of forgotten about us, and that's why this, you know, the second or third album flopped. And you could say, well, maybe it wasn't as good, and that's possible too. But sometimes it's just to do with the link between the artist or the band and, you know, somebody at the record company really believes in them, and then they're the one in the boardroom telling six or seven other people, no, believe in these guys, they've really got it together. And then you've got to get seven people to nod and go, yeah, okay, we trust you, you know. So yeah, it's all a bit, all of that's a little bit of a lottery. It's all sort of changing now, because I think a lot of people are self, a lot more people can self-release, obviously, and then it's a question of budget, you know. You have to put some of your own work into and invest in yourself.
Yeah, for sure.
And then there are kind of things like, you you can then, if you want, you can pay people to push you, but do it per release.
It's a murky industry, even that, though, isn't it? There's murky things are happening, even, you know, with, as far as kind of paying people to try and, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you can pay someone to you know, to try and playlist you, but only the playlister can decide if they're going to accept your song. So, yeah, you know, you could be paying.
It's a bit iffy, that, isn't it?
This is the thing, you know?
We've got, I mean, I use something called Submit Hub, where you submit to playlisters, and actually so far we've got really good, been playlisted a few times thanks to them. You get transparent feedback, and actually most of them are pretty constructive,
yeah, and
even if they don't playlist it.
And also, rather than kind of paying a company like a set amount a month, you actually just pay like per, so like I think it costs whatever it costs to submit a track per playlist or something.
It's a
couple
dollar.
Of credits, a dollar. Yeah, yeah, something like that, you know. So you take more control over who you submit to.
And that's the same or less than it would have been sending a cassette off to a record company.
Yeah.
Or CD.
Right, gotcha. You know, yeah, yeah,
you would have paid for that too. So
yeah. Yeah, like the price of a stamp, I guess.
Yeah.
What do you think is good about the music industry now compared to previously? And in general, do you think the music industry will ever change and improve?
It has to change. Well, it has to change. I think, yeah, what we discussed earlier, people being able to self-release and at least get their music somewhere where it can be instantly listened to is actually great.
I think as well, like massively, I think is like the rise of like independent artists within scenes like the UK rap scene. Like I think we are massively like huge fans of UK rap. You know, we've warmed up for a few artists at festivals like Dave and Freddo and people like that. And
amazing.
You know, we were genuinely fans. We've been fans of them for a while now, like for years. You know, pretty much since quite early on. We're kind of early adopters. I think being in London, and it was obviously, it kind of started quite London centric. And now there's rappers coming in from other cities as well, you know, which is amazing. You're getting like, you know, with their regional accents, which we also love. I love that whole British vibe of like, you know, I'm gonna rap in a I'm gonna rap in a Scouse accent, or I'm gonna rap in a Manc accent, or like a Brum accent. It's really cool. And but I just think as well, like, just the representation that of this scene is bringing, you know, to the industry was so overdue and so needed, you know. And also the fact that it's UK and not just American, because obviously, you know, I love hip-hop and I love your golden era hip-hop and I love American hip-hop, but at the same time, it's really nice to have UK hip-hop not trying to sound like Americans and being like, we're from the UK, this is us, and we're representing, you know, our city and our country.
People like that. People like it when they're relatable. Mm. So kids in Manchester will, you know, if they're H might be the first thing they hear when they're 10 or something, and they're like, oh, he sounds
Bugsy.
Like me, Bugsy Malone.
Yeah.
People like that, and that's really good, and that actually harks back to kind of, you know, Britpop and all those kind of things that came out of particular cities, or the Manchester scene. All of that, I just see it as the same thing. It's just with different ways of getting your, you know, your personality, your message across.
Yeah. I think that's the best thing that's happened to music in like pretty much the last decade, is like the UK
the
rap
only,
explosion.
Only identifiable thing that's genuinely new, because dance music's been around for so long.
Yeah.
It's
and so
it's
exciting.
The only thing that's really sort of exploded maybe the last 10 years, it's properly come
into
its own.
Well, it started with grime, didn't it? And then it kind
grime.
Of just grew like into this kind of huge, you know.
Yeah, it had a 2.0 moment, about, you know, a few years ago.
So what do you think of, I guess, these artists we're mentioning, but also other artists, sampling? What do you think of sampling?
Ooh.
Sampling has a very long history with roots going back a very, 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 very long time.
It's there's a lot of dance
Okay,
tracks.
So let me rephrase the question, because Yeah, I mean, if you were to go on, you know, Who Sampled It or whatever the website is, and you type in a track, pretty much everything has been sampled in some respects. But obviously, at the moment, there's a big we're going through a phase of a lot of artists who are sampling 90s dance tunes, I think you're maybe about to say, Joe, or you know, noughties dance tunes. What do you think about that? Do you think it's good? I mean, one of my sort of pet peeves about it is that a lot of people, and it's I really like 90s dance and noughties dance. I'm a big fan of that and 90s house, etc. And it really does annoy me when people are like, "Wow, did you see that? You know, so and so new song." And I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, it's good, isn't it?" And like that, the instrumental, it's so good. I'm like, "What? They didn't make it? Like, what do you mean? Oh, yep. it's I don't know, Moose Tea, for example. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
I totally know what you're saying. Yeah, it's a bit of a micro trend, especially the last few years. It's always kind of happened because I think way back to the early days of house music, maybe in the early 90s, they would maybe lift a 70s record. It happened in hip hop a lot. Personally, I don't know if I'd want my, you know, current number one is LF Sound System. It's a rip of some disco tune from 40 years ago, and they've just filtered it and put a beat on it. I just think it's a bit of a backward looking thing, and I just think the things that will define this decade are going to be things that were originated in this decade. So that's why we're talking, you know, UK rap and certain types of.
I mean, UK rap does it as well, to be fair. They do sample,
but a lot less than hip hop did.
Yeah. And you know, it's in dance music as well. You know, a lot of people, rather than just sampling straight off, they'll cover songs, basically, like redo songs, which is happening a lot as well. I guess to kind of give people the feeling that they know a song, and it's a very safe way to play it. And I respect it, but at the same time, I'm like, come on, we can collectively do better than this. We can collectively, there must be so much good new music.
Do you think some artists are relying on younger people being naive and sort of uneducated within the sort of realms of music? So, I mean, you know, I was under the impression that there would be some kind of sample to Afraid to Feel by LF System, but as you were just talking then, I was still listening, but I quickly played the sample and it's a direct sample. It's not like a little bit.
Yeah.
As you said, they've essentially just grabbed the song and, you know, quantized it and added a few sort of filters to it.
Yeah, I mean, with that one, I didn't know the disco record it originated from. I knew, but Rasputin.
It happened. To be fair, it happened in the 90s and noughties as well, didn't it? With dance music a lot.
It did happen.
You know?
I just think if that was your biggest hit and you were 70 looking back and going, yeah, our biggest hit was just actually us rearranging something else, I'd be a bit disappointed. I'd love it if I wrote everything to do with that.
Is that the fault of the people listening to the song though, rather than the producer? I guess you could say the producer just trying to, you know, make their way, get to the point where they're,
I think it's
where
an
they're
accident.
Getting £1,000. Yeah, exactly.
I think with this one that's currently doing so well, it's a bit of an accident. I don't think they expected it to blow up.
I think it's really difficult though, like for listeners as well, because I think a lot of people, like we were saying earlier, a lot of music's mixed up, so people don't necessarily recognize. It's easy for us as DJs to look at stuff and go, well, that's from the noughties, or that's, you know, we can pretty much pinpoint, you know, timestamp years for tracks. We know where things came from, and we often know where samples came from. I think it's also muddled up nowadays that people haven't got a clue if it's an old 90s R&B tune, or, you know, if it's taken from a funk record, or, you know, I think it's a lot more confusing for people because they hear music, like playlists on Spotify, a lot of them are like by mood. They're not like by decade necessarily, you know. A lot of it's like tunes to, you know, do your uni work to, or like tunes to work out to, or tunes to have a cup of coffee to.
Party tunes, and it's, you know, just I mean? Things that are actually 25 years old.
Yeah.
And we're pretty bored of them. And then somebody's just heard them. To them, it's new. Yeah. You're like, well, it came out 25 years ago.
But then I don't really like gatekeeping either. I think, you know, like the Kate Bush thing where people are like, oh, it's been around for ages. You don't know. You just think it's, you know, from Stranger Things. It's like, come on. Don't be that person.
No, I played it, but I found a nice little remix that just added a kick to it and made it sound like modern.
Yeah,
so,
I think
I think it works on whether you. It's just a personal choice. If you like the original, why not give it a spin again? You know, we normally find some kind of re-edit or.
I suppose that camera takes people not knowing the original. Yeah. I guess. And
well, it's not necessarily. It's not really their fault, is it? No, they weren't alive.
No.
go culture yourself. Go educate yourself. That's the better thing.
Go buy an album.
When was the last time? Okay, here's one for you both. When was the last time you both listened to an album in full from start to finish?
Oh, mine's really embarrassing. It was the Beyonce's Renaissance just the other day. On the day out, I did listen to it from start to finish.
And what do you think of
it? I wanted to hear, I thought, you know what, this is a bit of a cultural moment that I sort of need to do it on the day it came out. I mean, listen, it's Beyonce, you know, like there's, I mean, I love her. I think she's incredible. But at the same time, it's like, if that had been somebody else's album, would it have had the hype? Would it have had the respect? Probably not. There's some great tunes on there. There's some questionable sampling happening on there. There's obviously some beef happening now with other artists like Khalees. I mean, it's quite a controversial album, I think. I think there's a lot kind of, you know, there's a lot to say about it. I enjoyed the listening experience. I will say that, you know, I put it on during the day. It's quite long. I like the fact that each track leads into each other, but it all feels very calculated. And I think that's a bit sad because it feels like lots of people got together in a room and went, right, this is how this is going to go.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Rather than sort of like,
I bet it was a lot of people. Lot. As well.
Have you seen the credits? Have you looked at at the credits per track? It's really interesting. And there was also loads and loads of big name producers on there, like Skrillex and people that are only appearing in the credits. And it's really interesting that it's just saying Beyonce, 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 and then in hiding in the credits. If you go through each track and look at the credits, if you've got time, there's loads
of as we speak.
Massive names hiding in the credits, which is just really interesting to me.
Yeah, that goes back to what we say about Diplo, a lot there, of people involved in making these, you know, big budget, and they are effectively.
It's like making a movie.
It's like making a movie. I was going to say, I do sometimes. Recently, off the top of my head, Wolf Alice had a train journey.
Nice.
Perfect for train journey, Wolf Alice album. And a new rapper called French the Kid from Essex, who's kind of like Essex version of H.
Heard the name.
Yeah,
heard
check him out.
He raps in English and in French.
Super good. And his party trick is he is actually half brought up in France. They can speak French. So halfway through his rap, he's got an Essex kind of, you know, accent. But halfway through,
that's incredible.
He flips into French and raps in French for a verse. The beats are brilliant. And top tip, I think, to go mainstream in the next couple of years, French the Kid.
I enjoy seeing your stories when you've got the reels and stuff like that. And it's great to see. So I was literally about to comment in. I think I saw there was like three. But yeah, I mean, it's incredible. What you're both doing is amazing.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I mean, the other thing, the big thing that I learned, which Joe is amazing at, is production. He sort of basically taught me during lockdown. I'd already knew a little bit about Ableton, but I really, really got into it now. And now I've, you know, we produce together. And it's nice to be able to say as a woman that I can actually produce. It's not, you know, I'm not being ghost produced by Joe. It's like we do it together. We both work on tracks together. I think Joe is still like the Yoda. I'm still a bit of a Padawan. but you know,
Star Wars joke.
If you haven't watched Star Wars, you'll not get that. I'm also a massive geek.
I don't look like Yoda though. The radio listeners.
Yeah. Would you rather be Obi-Wan Kenobi?
No, somebody that's not like 500 years
green,
old.
A lot of green.
500 years old.
Han Solo. I'm Han Solo. There you go.
Do you ever disagree with each other when you're making music?
Totally, because what we've been talking about is I'm a little bit right, and it's only right now. I love all genres of music because at the end of the day, it's just beats, electronics, and notes, and there's 12 notes on the keyboard. You know, I'm a little bit more into the hip hop UK rap side of things, and Jem's a little bit more into house. So when we make a track, we just try to come to a compromise. And what we're doing for our next release, which is about to come out, is Jem's done her own remix of a track I came up with. And then
it's like a pop track that we worked on together. But I would say Joe had, well, we did definitely work on it together. Yeah. I think it's maybe slightly more yours than mine.
Yeah.
Although it was, you know, and then I did my own VIP of it, which isn't coming out yet. It's coming out in a couple of weeks' time. We're just literally just getting the master finished at the moment. And that's one, it's kind of my first one that I've sort of done all on my own, basically.
Yeah.
We released a series of remixes during lockdown, which were obviously both of us. I think Joe, it was probably more like, you know, maybe Joe did about three quarters of them.
We both worked on all of them.
One of them I did a bit more of, one of them, you know, Joe did a bit more of, a couple of them, the other two we were more equal on, you know. But when we say we work together, people probably think, oh, how do you work together on a track? Well, we both obviously have Ableton, and then what we do is we'll basically export the project and send it to the other person, and then they will then go on it and go, okay, well, do you know what, I'm going to alter this and alter that. And it's a lot about having trust in the other person. Like, you have to trust that what they're going to do is not going to, you know, obviously you're not going to like get it back and go, oh my god, what have you done, you've erased all the bits that I worked on. And, you know, we're very respectful of each other's work.
Yeah, and totally. I mean, you the remix you and something you just started today, and it just sounding fantastic, and I had nothing to do with it, and I'm like, I want to get my hands on that and add a bit to it. And she you know, do you know what I mean, it's got to be a symbiotic thing, and it's got to represent both of us. So there's times when I'll go, yeah, Jem's done the remix on this, or I'll do my spin on something she started, and that we've got a proper partnership going.
I've learned so much from Joe as well.
USP with a male female DJ, you know, DJ duo.
I like that. Yeah.
And there aren't many of them.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, a while ago we went, let's make it official in musical terms, you know, Atari and Precious. And, you know, hopefully
cool name, it works so well.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, without being too sickly.
So we didn't want to be all like coupley about it. Like, we like to leave it a little bit, like, we always call each other, like, say, our partner, rather than, you know, like, you know. Do you know what I mean? Like, we don't want to be all like you know, God, like a couple making music, that's really sickly.
Yeah,
so we like to be a bit more White Stripes about it, and maybe leave it a little bit to imagination.
I like pop duos. I like White Stripes, Eurythmics. I like that dynamic where Jem's the kind of sunshine, and I'm a bit of a shadowy figure.
Except I can't really sing. That's the only problem. But other than that,
it's built on that model. It's a collaboration.
And I've got to big up Joe himself as well, because he's an absolutely incredible producer. And I think, you know, I think there's a lot of big things to come from
Joe.
Thank
you, honey.
No, he's taught me a lot, and I've just learned so much from him. You know,
we're still learning. We're still learning all about streaming. Is such a minefield.
Yeah.
The whole process, we're still very DIY, and that gives us control. And there's also, you know, if anybody is listening to this, we're always up for remixing people, producing people, collaborating with people. That's what we did in lockdown. We approached people we played on our show and said, hey, we really like your track. It was kind of hyper pop people, you know, emo people, and said, we can put a spin on it. And they went, yep, send us the files.
Rapper. We put our own spin.
Rappers, anybody across the genres. Because at the end of the day, like I said, it's still all beats and melodies, whatever it is.
Amazing. I actually have a few artist friends, rapper friends in Manchester who I could, you know, give them your email addresses.
By all means. By all means.
Definitely. Before I let you go, there's a question I ask every single guest, and I want an answer from both of you. And that is, if I gave you a blank canvas, what would you paint on it? Gemma, you go first.
Okay, a blank canvas. Well, I'm really into portraiture. I'm not very good at painting, but I do really like drawing. I think faces are just fascinating. I'm absolutely fascinated by faces. I think it would definitely be portraiture for me. So I don't know who of, but yeah, just a series of portraits maybe.
Nice.
Me?
Wholesome answer.
Thanks.
I do paint. I'm looking. I've done about 10 meter wide canvases in our flat.
They're hanging at the moment.
my next thing, I've done a lot of kind of collages of figures, art and kind of art deco. I've painted Dave doing Black at the Brits. I've done a full painting of that. Because it was a great visual, and it was black and white.
Played on the piano, is
yeah, at the piano.
Like, yeah.
I'll send you a picture so you see what I mean. The thing, when I have time, what I want to do is choose a year, find all the articles and pictures I can on it, and paint it. So if I choose, say, 1981. I'll find all the pop stars from that era and collage them together.
That's a good idea. I like that.
So that's for the next 20 years, because I never get time to paint. But that's what I want. That's the next thing I would paint if you said you've got to paint something. I'd paint a year.
Well, both of you, thank you so much for your time. Atari and Precious, Jem and Joe, thank you so much.